is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is overseeing the distribution of nearly $13 billion in COVID-19 aid to schools around the country. But a new rule would make public schools give at least some of that money to their private counterparts. The decision has prompted multiple lawsuits from school districts, parents, and the NAACP. Here to help us understand why and how is Beth Lewis, a Title I school parent and teacher. She's also a plaintiff in one of the lawsuits against DeVos and the co-founder of grassroots advocacy group Save Our Schools Arizona. Beth, welcome to 1A.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Andrew Ujifusa. He's an assistant editor at Education Week. Andrew, welcome. Andrew, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay, great. Welcome to the program. Andrew, first, tell us about this rule. Explain how it would work.
So normally for federal education funding, there is a rule that says school districts have to share a certain amount of money to help low-income students in private schools with things like technology licenses and tutoring services like that. A provision like that was included in the CARES Act. Betsy DeVos interpreted that to mean that CARES money should go to not just low-income private school students, but all private school students in a local school district. And as you can imagine, that has really been a divisive decision. And initially, DeVos's statement on the matter was guidance, not a requirement. But she has since issued a mandate, a rule, that will probably lead many school districts to distribute a slice of their CARES funding to all local private school students, rich or poor. And a lot of local school districts, as well as state education officials, aren't happy about that, but Betsy DeVos's logic is that the pandemic has affected all students, regardless of where they go to school, and so they should all benefit generally from CARES aid.
Beth, what would that mean for a district like yours?
So as a parent and teacher in a Title I district, I think my primary concern is related to the impact on children and the way that this will sort of double down on the inequities that already exist. So Secretary DeVos's rule puts illegal and harmful requirements on this emergency relief funding. And one aspect that is really, really worrisome is that the vast majority of the private schools that will be receiving this have already accepted loans as small businesses. And so I think this really underscores the unfairness of the rule and maybe a lack of thinking. We also know that forcing districts to allocate those federal dollars to private schools under DeVos's guidance, there's no consideration for poverty. And so that really exacerbates what we already see as huge inequities in funding in our system. There was a report that was released last year that showed that our nation already spends $23 billion less on non-white schools than white schools. So we have huge inequities in the system, and it really becomes a civil rights issue. You know, children all across the U.S. are facing risks to their safety, their education, and there's already less access to, you know, in schools like mine, to digital devices, infrastructure, meals, counseling. And so, you know, in practice, this rule would really double down on these gaps and, frankly, in my mind, is immoral.
Andrew, Title I schools, that means that at least 40% of the students come from low-income households. How common are Title I schools around the country?
They're very common in terms of the number of schools that receive Title I dollars in the most recent fiscal year. I believe it's the majority of schools. There are about 100,000 school districts, and a lot of them have Title I schools. There aren't many school districts that have there are about 13,600 school districts, and most of them have at least one Title I school. So there's going to be a lot of disparities between schools, even within a single district.
We're talking about how public school districts around the country will have to use their COVID-19 relief aid with Beth Lewis, a plaintiff in one of the lawsuits against Education Secretary Betsy DeVos over CARES Act funding. She's also a Title I school parent and teacher. Also with us, Andrew Ujifusa, assistant editor at Education Week. And we're talking to you. Anthony writes on Facebook, I think, yes, private schools should receive comparable emergency assistance. This is an unprecedented challenge, and there's no reason private schools should be singled out as unworthy of the COVID aid benefits available to small businesses and every industry. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and from our guests in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code 1A. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
How do you maintain a friendship in the middle of a pandemic?
Including our last restaurant meal. My last restaurant meal was with you. I love that.
Wow.
Aminatou Sow and Ann Friedman gave me some friend pointers. They host a podcast called Call Your Girlfriend, and they wrote a book all about friendship. Listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
We're discussing education funding with Beth Lewis, a plaintiff in one of the lawsuits against Education Secretary Betsy DeVos over CARES Act funding. She's also a Title I school parent and teacher. Also with us, Andrew Ujifusa, assistant editor at Education Week. Well, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos has been defending the rule. She told NPR, quote, "The CARES Act is a special pandemic-related appropriation to benefit all American students, teachers, and families impacted by the coronavirus. There is nothing in the law Congress passed that would allow districts to discriminate against children and teachers based on private school attendance and employment." Andrew, explain a little bit more about what the CARES Act said about this funding and how Secretary DeVos is interpreting what it actually says.
Sure. So I think when the CARES Act was written and this piece about aid to private schools was included, I don't think many people anticipated that it would become the subject of controversy that it has. I think your listeners should understand that under the bill, there was always going to be at least a small percentage of CARES funding going to low-income private school students the districts would have to support. The real question is about, you know, should all private school students, regardless of their economic backgrounds, benefit from this money? I think it's also worth pointing out that Senator Lamar Alexander, the chairman of the Senate Education Committee, a Republican, has said that he did not think that Congress wrote that part of the law in line with Betsy DeVos's interpretation of it. Now, he hasn't really come out strongly against her, but he made it pretty clear that he has a different interpretation of the law. So that's something to keep in mind also.
Well, we heard from one listener about the students he's most worried about.
My name is Alex Randolph, and I'm a public school music teacher in Jefferson County, Colorado. When we transitioned to at-home learning last year, teachers and other school workers saw how students coming from less affluent families were struggling more. Many had internet connectivity issues, lack of supervision, parents that were frontline workers, and additional stresses preventing students from being able to learn and attend class remotely. Whereas students from more affluent families attended class more regularly, completed more assignments, and moreover, were able to manage with less hardship. Simply, well-to-do families will continue to manage fine amidst the pandemic for the most part, whereas families in public school, especially in Title I schools, will need additional support in order to create a more equitable learning environment.
Beth, as I said, you're a Title I teacher and parent. Talk a little bit about what it's been like for your students during this pandemic.
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, at my school, I definitely saw what your listener is speaking about. So many of our families don't have personal laptops in the home. They don't have reliable high-speed internet. We have many families in Arizona that don't even have access to electricity. So it's our responsibility as a public school to help provide digital infrastructure so that all of our students have access to online learning. But that becomes really difficult when we're being forced, you know, by Secretary DeVos to spread that money to kids in private schools who, you know, like your caller said, come from affluent backgrounds. And we have very real needs in terms of purchasing PPE and retrofitting our classrooms for safety. We have the most crowded classrooms in the entire United States here in Arizona. So, you know, we're talking about 36, 40 kids in a classroom. So we have very real needs to hire teachers, you know, expand like portable, you know, situations out in the back of our school so that we can reduce class sizes. And this is expensive. I don't think people realize how expensive it is and how, you know, that money just doesn't go very far. We have to hire more custodians, nurses, counselors. You know, there's been a lot of trauma associated with this. And when I think another caller had pointed out that private schools can receive small business loans. And so that, I think, underscores the point that it's kind of double dipping, right? Those private schools are private. They're private companies. They can already receive federal relief in another through another mechanism.
Well, Linda emailed us saying, I understand from reading my local newspaper that private schools were able to receive funding from PPP while public schools were not. How can taking funds from public schools now be fair? Andrew, is that accurate that private schools were able to receive PPP loans?
Yes, some private schools were able to receive that money. In fact, a little while ago, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin sort of publicly scolded some wealthy private schools that had taken that money and said essentially that they should give it back. So some private schools have been able to take advantage of that program, not in any sort of illicit or underhanded way. They were just eligible. But I think some people have raised some concerns about whether that's the right thing to do, especially for wealthy private schools. And I think it's also worth noting that one of the arguments from private schools here is that, you know, if we close, and some private schools have closed due to the pandemic, then a lot of the students will then have to transfer to local public schools, creating additional costs for those districts just at the time when they're facing a big state and local budget crunch, when they're probably going to be losing a lot of money in many instances, which will make it harder for them to accept those students. But that aside, I do think there are concerns that a lot of people have voiced about the different ways that private schools have been able to benefit from coronavirus relief money in ways perhaps that public schools have not.
Beth, when we talk about educating kids, it's not just about what happens in the classroom, and this is something you alluded to. There are so many wraparound services schools are also providing. How thinly stretched are you right now in Arizona?
I mean, I think it's made national headlines over the years, but Arizona is at the bottom of the barrel by, you know, basically every metric in education funding. And, you know, I think I'd be remiss to not point out that Secretary DeVos, you know, it's no surprise that this is coming from Secretary DeVos. Through my work with Save Our Schools Arizona, we've researched, you know, sort of the private school voucher proliferation. And Secretary DeVos's Family Foundation has been working to massively expand private school funding in Arizona and in other states for decades. And she's made no secret about this work and this agenda. And in Arizona, how that's played out is we have hundreds of millions of dollars diverted to private school vouchers every year. And we have the bottom of the barrel in funding. And, you know, that's not accidental. We've been strategically defunded. And so, you know, it's hard to parse out DeVos's role in all of this. She is complicit, and we don't have a dime to spare in our public schools. And frankly, at this point, we can't safely reopen in Arizona, partially because of, you know, coronavirus being such a hotspot here, but also because we don't have the funds to reduce class sizes to meet CDC requirements, and we don't have the funds to meet students' needs.
Well, there's a lot more to talk about here with my guests, Beth Lewis and Andrew Ujifusa, and we'll do just that right after we take a quick break. Stay close. This is 1A.
Every business has to figure out what to charge for its product and how to keep out competitors. You know who does this better than anyone else? Drug dealers. On the next episode of Planet Money Summer School, we explain pricing theory with a drug kingpin. Summer School, new classes every Wednesday. Listen now to Planet Money from NPR.
This is 1A, and we're talking about how education is being handled and perhaps mishandled during the pandemic. Well, earlier this month on CNN, Education Secretary DeVos was asked about the safety of reopening, and here's what she had to say.
Well, we know that children get the virus at a far lower rate than any other part of the population. And again, there is nothing in the data that would suggest that kids being back in school is dangerous to them. And in fact, it's more a matter of their health and well-being that they be back in school. And we've seen this in other countries in Europe and elsewhere in the world where students have gone back to school and have done so very successfully. That should be the goal.
Well, Andrew, talk about how districts across the country are responding to this.
Well, so I think for a lot of districts, it's been a very confusing environment. I feel like many local school administrators feel like there's a lack of leadership, at all levels above them, from the president to Secretary DeVos, including state governors and state education leaders. I think they have so many things to juggle, from school transportation. How do you ensure the kids can get to school safely on a bus socially distant? How do you pay for personal protective equipment and cleaning schools every day? Do you have to have some students out in tents, perhaps, at the start of the school year, at least? There are so many things that they're juggling. I talked to one superintendent who said he wakes up in the middle of the night just thinking about these issues, and he feels like he's in a fog. And on top of all that, because of the looming budgetary problems for many districts, he told me he feels as though, you know, if he doesn't keep his budget in the black at the end of the year, he's going to lose his job. So there are so many things that they're juggling right now. I think a lot of people are making a good faith effort. There is a lot of consternation at school district level right now. And remember, a lot of districts are going to open, if not in the next few days, then in the next couple of weeks. So this is not a problem that we're talking about in some abstract way that's weeks or months off.
In another interview earlier this week with Fox News, Betsy DeVos responded to pushback about her stance on reopening schools by highlighting the impact that closing schools had. Let's listen.
We know, and as Secretary Azar said, this is a question of health versus health, not health versus something else. We know that kids are suffering mentally with many mental issues. We know that kids are suffering with socio-emotional learning issues. We know that kids from vulnerable populations and homes have been suffering by not being in school and by not continuing their learning. All of those are measures that have to be weighed along with the risk of a virus. And we know, again, from the data, that kids don't get this virus the same way adults do.
Beth, what are you seeing at your school and in your district in terms of how the pandemic is impacting kids and how you're balancing that social and emotional connection that they want and need with keeping them physically healthy?
Yeah, so when we were forced to kind of pivot to online learning within a couple of days in March, my school made calls to every single family. We were just making sure everybody was okay. Our counselor made, kind of Zoom office hours available. And I know she facilitated a lot of individual sessions with me, with parents, with teachers, and the students who needed it the most. And I think schools have been incredibly innovative and ingenuitive. I've got a friend who's a psychologist. psychologist, and she's moved her whole practice, which is working with teenagers, online. And, you know, I think we're starting to realize that anything can be done with proper amounts of planning. I think the biggest frustration for educators in Arizona and across the country has been sort of this lack of long-term planning. We've had 4 months to get this right. And instead, you know, our governor here, Governor Doug Ducey, has had this piecemeal approach that has kind of left everybody in the lurch. And, you know, sort of like Secretary DeVos, there was some funding that was going to be withheld. So it was very punitive for schools that were not willing to open in person. And, you know, like that superintendent who's losing sleep, I mean, educators in Arizona are terrified. Educators are posting online, writing their wills for the first time in their lives, making plans for their children. I think DeVos, you know, when she talks about children and their health as a parent, you know, I'm very resistant to that because I've read the science and I know that kids can absolutely get sick, hospitalized, or even worse. But teachers, I mean, it's ignoring the fact that our teachers are there to serve our kids. And, you know, we're being asked to make sub plans for 2 weeks instead of 2 days because they know that the likelihood is high that we're probably going to contract the disease at some point and be put on quarantine or worse. And so teachers are scared. I think people feel unsafe and undervalued, frankly, by the state.
Well, Andrew, as we know, Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has included some education funding in the Republican proposed HEALS Act. Have you had a chance to take a critical look at this bill and what it could mean for education?
Yes. So the new bill from McConnell and Senate Republicans to a certain extent reflects the push from the Trump administration that schools should physically reopen wherever possible. The main thing to know about it is that it has about $70 billion for K-12 schools, but two-thirds of that money for both public and private schools is conditioned on some type of plan that districts have to submit to governors and get approved by governors. Some type of plan to physically reopen and offer in-person instruction. Now, there's some wiggle room there in terms of, you know, you don't necessarily have to offer full instruction in person all the time, 5 days a week. But this push from Republicans, including in the White House, for schools to physically reopen and to condition federal aid on that has been extremely controversial among Democrats, teachers' unions, and other people in the education community. They say it's too risky, that it creates the wrong incentives for schools. And Senator Patty Murray, who is a top Democrat for education policy in the U.S. Senate, has called the idea of conditioning money a non-starter. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this bill gets dealt with and negotiated over in the Senate before we have some kind of final deal that Congress can send to the president.
That's Andrew Ujifusa. He's an assistant editor at Education Week. Andrew, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Beth Lewis, she's a plaintiff in one of the lawsuits against Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. She's a Title I school parent and teacher. She's also the co-founder of the grassroots advocacy group Save Our Schools Arizona. Beth, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And if you didn't get your fill of education today, don't worry, we've got you covered. Next month, we're devoting a whole week of shows to the subject. Our new series, Homeworked, will dive into some of the thorniest questions K-12 schools are trying to answer right now, from when and how to reopen to the role of things like grades and school counselors. Do you work in a school? Are you a student, a parent? What questions do you have about schools in the fall? Tell us at 855-236-1A1A, and we'll get to your questions and stories and more during Homeworked this August on 1A. This conversation was produced by Emmanuel Johnson and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.